Hotel history is created for adult audiences. Content may not be suitable for all listeners. Discretion is advised. You're listening to Hotel History. We take you with us through the sordid history and scandals of some of the world's most famous and infamous hotels. I'm Dieta.
And I'm Yael. Let's get started.
We had an amazing trip at the Lodge at Marconi in Marshall, California, back in April. The lodge is located about an hour north of San Francisco, right on Tomales Bay, and it is located on a 62-acre California state park, so the setting is beautiful. The property goes back all the way to 1914, and its history includes the site of a notorious cult back in the 60s and 70s. So this episode is a combination of our thoughts on our experience there, an interview we got to do with the general manager, Leah Fritz Vitale, and then also a little bit more of a deep dive into the history. So we're going to start with our thoughts on our stay there.
We had such a great time. Everyone there was so nice. We want to give a shout out to every single person that spoke to us, that we encountered.
So helpful and just friendly.
So sweet. Yeah.
They make you feel very welcome, and like you, their lobby area is really cute and really want to hang out in there. It's got couches and fireplaces.
No, it's very homey. It's a totally different vibe. You get the small town vibe. Everyone's just chill. It's very personal. Mm-hmm. Everything has like the details. I want to just like the details in this place is so well done. Whoever renovated the place and designed it did an excellent job. They kept the spirit. They didn't just like modernize it to make it look hip. Like they really made you feel the 1970s, but not tacky.
Forest colors, the muted browns and golds and greens, but yeah, everything in harmony and really blending in nicely right into the outside with all of the plant life outside. It was so relaxing there.
It was, yeah, relaxing, warm. They said that the original tiles from the cult era was used in the bathroom that we were in.
Yes, our shower.
Our shower was wild.
It was straight up 1970s. Like you could immediately tell the difference between, oh, this is real 1970s.
Yeah.
Because this is inspired by the 1970s, like the rest of the room.
They did an excellent job with us specifically and with all their guests, because when we got to the place, they welcomed us and they were excited. You can tell the excitement on whoever was talking to us once they found out we were there. And then when we got to our room, we had a little like rosé bottle of wine in a cooler with like some snacks and a handwritten note waiting for us.
So sweet. Like we were so touched, and it just made us feel like so great that we were excited to be there and that they were also excited for us to come. And yeah, it was so nice.
So we would like to also thank Elizabeth Dewey, who was our contact for the Lodge at Marconi. She reached out to us about, you know, doing an episode about the place. And whenever we had a question or concern, she answered us and she was on top of it. And she was so nice. Also, Hannah Corcoran, who we met on the premises once we were there. Mm-hmm. She also works with Elizabeth, and she was really, really helpful too. And of course, Leah, the manager, who we interview.
Oh, and I think it was Matthew, the groundskeeper, who told us that Leah is actually responsible for a lot of the little details and touches that we loved so much. So you have a good eye, Leah.
Yes. Yes. Matthew was really nice too. And so was Sage. So in the morning, they offered yoga on like a top of the hill. And there was this great yoga teacher. Her name's Cecilia. Shout out to her. She was so supportive and so kind to us. And she's a great teacher.
I haven't had a yoga class in a while, and it was exactly what I needed.
Yeah. It was so nice. The weather was so perfect because it was like a little chilly, but not chilly, chilly. Like you weren't chilled to the bone. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're just like always uncomfortably chilly or something.
Yeah. And she picked the perfect spot. She took us on a short little hike up Tower Hill where Marconi's antennas used to be. And so we got to do yoga on top of this hill so we could see the bay in front of us. And then if we turned, you know, in a yoga move or something, we could see all of the rolling hills to all the other sides of us. So it was really picturesque and meditative.
I was really moved by the yoga. I told you, like, I was very emotional. I thought I was going to cry. I don't know why. I was like, this is so beautiful.
Doing yoga in a beautiful setting really elevates it. I don't know what it is about it. It's like, not only are you connecting to your breath and your body, but now you're also connected to the whole damn world, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. We couldn't finish the class. We had a reservation at Mabel's, which is another amazing thing about this place, is their restaurant.
Yes.
This place. Okay. I don't know what it is. Are we just like winning the jackpot of meals when we go to hotels?
I don't know, because it was delicious. We ate there twice.
I think we should have. I regret not eating there a third time.
I do too.
I would have gone the third time. The stuff we got, everything is organic, or it feels organic. I don't think they claim that. Locally sourced everything. It's a place where there's a lot of farms, a lot of like, they do a lot of dairy, and a lot of cows are there. And so you can taste the freshness in the food. They like make their own butter.
Mm-hmm.
They make their own sourdough bread.
Yeah. They source their cheeses from local creameries. They get the oysters from out of the bay. Like, it's as fresh and local as you can possibly imagine.
Also, the staff and the waiters were great. So helpful. And yeah, we went there for dinner, and then we went there for brunch. And then my favorite part about this place is they have this fire pit. It's the best because it's always going. So like, people, you get to take your turn with it. That was so fun. We met some people there. We wanted to take some footage, and they were kind enough that they let us, you know, record them a little bit. So shout out to the people we met there. They were really nice. So they had a Marconi day with like a festival where people came and music and like little stalls of different things. Met great people. We learned so much about the history of the place, and we saw pictures of how it used to look. And the first thing I said was, there are no trees. That's not the same. Like, I was shocked. we spoke to the park rangers.
Yes.
Shout out to them. They were so nice.
It was so cool to see young female park rangers.
Yeah.
Literally never met a young park ranger or a female park ranger. And so I was so awesome.
And there was also the florist, and she did, her floral arrangements were beautiful. She was like super busy. And then she said, I think it was her dad or someone she was related to, that was the oyster shucker right across. And we go, and I got my oysters. I really wanted to have my oysters, and they were so good. Like, I'm a big oyster person. I know it's not kosher, obviously. I don't know why, but growing up, you know, some things you just know you're gonna like. Every time I saw seafood, I'm like, I think that looks delicious. I can't eat it. And then when I finally got a, you know, became an adult, I'm like, let me see if I was right. 1,000%. It's exactly what I thought it would be, but better. And his oysters were great, and I was so happy.
Oh, and they had the live artist.
That was fun. That artist is so talented. Yeah. Also, I think everyone, from what I gathered, I think everyone knows each other and everyone's related to each other.
Yes, it turned out that one of the women working the front desk on Sunday, her nephew was the live artist. Small town vibes all over the place. Next up is our interview with Leah, and we will also include some extra snippets of history that we discovered after our interview with her.
We are here at the Lodge at Marconi, and we're going to interview the manager, Leah Fritz Vitali. Did I say your name right?
You did. That's okay. Correct. Yep.
So would you like to, well, you could introduce yourself, your title.
Yes. My name is Leah Fritz Vitali. I live here in Point Reyes Station for the last 14 years and have been managing this project for the last couple of years for Oliver Hospitality. I'm the hotel manager and the property manager. Lots of hats.
The problem solver.
Yeah.
The fire putter outer.
Pretty much, yeah. But I do enjoy that work, so.
So, a lot of people haven't heard of Lodge at Marconi. It's relatively new. It's been around 3 years, two and a half years?
September 2023, we reopened after a couple months of like a full gut renovation of the lodging and the restaurant.
And it's about, I think we drove the long way. So it was like an hour and a half, 2 hours from San Francisco.
Oh, which way did you go? Did you drive up the coast?
We drove up the coast.
Nice.
Because it said the same time.
It can be because of traffic, actually. Yeah. I used to do that. I used to live in the city and commute out here for work originally. It can take the same amount of time depending on traffic.
But the roads are super windy. Is it as windy on the other road, or is it just the one?
Small bursts of windiness, okay. But not as windy.
Not as windy.
Hairpin turn.
Yeah. It was a lot.
Very pretty. Did you see whales? Whales are migrating right now.
What?
No. Yeah.
So maybe you should go back that way then, because you can stop and look for whales.
We can look for whales and then go back.
True.
So how did you get started in the hotel industry? And also, how did you get started getting here? Place.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I am 20 years in hospitality. I started.
You don't look it.
That's so sweet. Thank you. I started out just basic. I need a job. So I ended up getting a job at a Marriott, and I started like really enjoying interacting with clientele and guests, and I started winning awards, and I was like, oh, maybe I'm good at this. I was moving from a place in Los Angeles to like kind of on the outskirts, Valencia, which I'm sure you're aware of.
Of course, yes.
And we moved into Hollywood. So I was like, well, I'm going to find a job at a hotel. I'm not going to commute to the Fairfield Marriott, you know, and Valencia. So I applied for a job at the Hotel Bel Air, which I never would have thought with my experience that was a shot for me there. But had a really good interview and met the general manager and the team. And so they brought me in as their like front desk / concierge, which was amazing. It was the formative years. I was in my early 20s and it was a wild place in Hollywood. It was very interesting working with the clientele that I got to work with. Basically, some like a level of like maintenance required and the way that I had to learn how to speak and carry myself. But I always maintained, and I still do to this day, that I want to be myself and my genuine self. And I feel like if you are relatable to people, then that's going to be like your best shot into like some level of trust, I think, and empathy and hospitality is really the key to success. So I learned that at a young age. I was there for several years when it was there that I met Mike Fried, who owned a company called Passport Resorts, a hospitality group, and they managed Post Ranch Inn. And I was like, oh, you're in Big Sur. Beautiful place. I would love to go up there because I additionally wanted to. I had split personality. I wanted to work in conservation. But I was, the hospitality was the kind of like the end, like this is my day job and I want to work. So I went and worked at the Monterey Bay Aquarium and he poached me and brought me to Post Ranch where I was there for 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how was working at the aquarium?
Life-changing. It was amazing. I got to talk about conservation all day long with guests and just kind of like, this is why the ocean is important and why we choose to eat these things and not these things and how we interact with like pollution and... It was incredible. But being there after hours
it's probably so
by
nice.
Yourself yes. with all the sea creatures was like amazing. It was a really incredible time. Post Ranch was also very nice.
Wait, so does that still exist, Post Ranch?
Post Ranch Inn is, it's one of the top luxury hotels in the world.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely take a peek. So fun fact about that, though, is when I was working there, they opened Cavallo Point in San Francisco across the bay in Sausalito. So they actually own that as well. Same hospitality group. So I was kind of part of the inner workings and, you know, as they were working with the federal government and the national parks and as they were kind of dovetailed into my role here, I just had maybe not experience in it, but like an idea of what it looks like.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite parts of my role here is working with the state parks. They're lovely.
We met two of the park rangers. They were so cool.
They're so cool. And they come here and do hikes once a month on the property and do nature and historical hikes.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. It's really, it's a joy.
But to go back, so you worked at Post Ranch and then you applied for a job here, or someone introduced you and or was like, you're amazing, come work here?
I took a break from hospitality. So when I started working in the cheese industry, I decided that I wanted to take the administrative skills I had in hospitality, because hospitality can be taxing.
Yeah,
it really can, because you're just on all the time, mm-hmm. whether you're managing a team while simultaneously guests, it's a lot. So I wanted to take the administrative skills that I had learned, because there's a lot of that that goes into hospitality as well, and apply that to working more in business, sales, marketing. So I gave that a shot. And then so it kind of just took off from there. And I just moved over into the business, managing businesses side of things. And it wasn't until I got a call. It was actually Caitlin, who heads all of our hospitality PR firm, met Amanda Eichstedt at the radio station, who was down at our International Marconi Day event today. And Amanda's like, have you met Leah? She has all this hospitality experience. Like, you should talk to her. And they cold called me and were like, hey, were you? I heard that maybe like you have like experience. Like, would you be interested in this project?
So they did reach out to you.
They did. now that you say that, yes, actually. Yes, they did.
They were smart.
Yeah.
It turned out to be, a great fit. So I said yes, and here I am.
So you've been here since the start.
Yeah, I was brought on May 2023. Oh, wow. Right when they closed it. It went from conference center to construction zone. We used to sit in this building that we're in now in Pine Hall, in that room next door, and it was our HQ. So that was our office while the hotel was under construction, which was lovely because the view is beautiful.
Yes. Yeah.
And lots of windows.
Yes.
I really enjoyed it. I miss it sometimes.
Before we get into the history of the property, tell us about the lodge today, like everything that you guys have created since the construction finished.
When we opened in September 2023, the day we opened, we had a huge 300 person event, so we were off to a bang, which was good because it was an investor group, and a lot of people have since come back and done meetings and retreats here. It's a little bit of a split personality project. We have a lot of weddings, we have a lot of corporate retreats, everything ranging from tech to sciences, universities, art. So we've had a lot of really diverse types of retreats and meetings that take place here, in addition to weddings. So we have a lot of weddings throughout the year. And then everything in between is leisure travel. So we have guests and their families. We're pet friendly, so lots of pups and dogs around. Every once in a while, we end up with a cat. But yeah, it's a 62-acre state park. So we have also, we're open to the public sunrise to sunset 7 days a week. So we have a mix of people just coming in and going for walks. But we're operating as a leisure property and an event space in between.
So that's a lot of different types of people that you are kind of marketing toward. Like, what's your key demographic that you're...
It is really all over the map. I mean, because of the historical aspect, we have sometimes an older demographic who's interested in the historical side, young couples from the Bay Area who have been coming up here for a long time as a day trip, now have a place that they find they can relate to and want to stay at because of the high design. Home Studios, our design house, did a phenomenal job. Everything's of really high quality. The art's really interesting. So that definitely narrows in and hones in on a specific demographic. And then families, because it's a state park. The culinary side now that Mabel's is open is a huge attraction to anybody who's interested in food, which the Bay Area is definitely very you know, food centric. So it's all over the map. So it's a very challenging, complex strategy for marketing.
Yeah. Well, you can see that because when we were walking around and we were talking to some people sitting around the fire pit, they just met, but they pretended they were on a retreat, a business retreat. We're like, oh, how do you guys know each other? Oh, from work. We're on a business retreat. I'm like, really? They're like, no, we just met. And it was exactly that. There was, you know, a couple with a kid and a couple coming from San Francisco. And then this couple was, you know, everyone had their story. And when we went to the restaurant and the food is amazing, we noticed that too. It's exactly this like eclectic group of people. But it seems to be a place that so many different kinds of people can enjoy. It really has something for everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've kind of, we're also choosing to... Or we're choosing our activities and programming and activations based on that too. So like aside from the marketing, you have to have offerings for a diverse group as well. So we're focusing on that a lot this year.
So you said you worked, you were really interested in conservation, have worked in conservation. So what have you brought to Marconi to go in that direction?
Wow. Well, yeah, my experience in conservation runs pretty deep. The company I was the CEO of before I worked here was called Juniper Ridge. And we worked with a portfolio of conservation organizations because we donated 10% of our sales annually to them. And that was a lot of money. And that was something the founder of the company was like a very important part of him starting the business. So I have a lot of those relationships I still have and maintain. So I feel like I would like to start to like if we can start doing charitable giving again in some sort of way that ties us and dovetails us back into that. Our sustainability initiatives are very strong. It's the property has a lot that we compostables, you know, like zero single use plastic on property. It's a 62 acre park and we work with the state park. So they have their own regulations and things that we have to adhere by, which we would want to anyway. But yeah, I would like to continue doing more. And I think bringing those types of groups in as and having retreats here and doing education with my staff and continuing our sustainability initiatives, it's very important to me. And we do a lot already, and I'm very proud of what we do. It's part of State Parks initiative, but we've also adopted it. So we're part of, it's called Dark Sky Marin. It's an international dark sky initiative. So all of our lights are down facing to protect wildlife and also to make it so that we're not contributing to light pollution.
I love that.
So all of West Marin has agreed together collectively to be part of this dark night sky initiative, which is, it's really special because like people are doing it at their house, businesses are doing it. It's all down facing light. So
that's all they need to do.
It's one of many things. I mean, there's
so
a lot
simple.
Of like.
Why doesn't everyone just do this?
When you're in LA next time driving around,
sometimes at night,
it's
I'm
crazy.
Like, I can't tell it's night.
I know, because the sky
so
is just
polluted.
Pink.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a really nice thing to do. And through that, one of our activities that we offer stargazing. Because we have that, so we have like telescopes at the front desk, and they're mostly for kids. But eventually, we want to start having. Somebody come do like bring a real telescope and do stargazing here and kind of educate. We had it at Post Ranch Inn as well. And I was one of the amateur astronomers that got to like man this really cool telescope and learned a lot. And I would love to apply that here because it's really fascinating. Yeah.
That sounds so fun. We want to stargaze tonight.
Oh, good. Yeah. I hope that there's stars.
Since I moved to LA from Texas, I have been starved of the night sky.
Starved.
Yes.
But you're in LA. You have different stars.
You also have different seasons.
Yeah, but I don't recognize any of those stars.
Well, I've always been star-starved. Because I'm from Brooklyn.
Oh, right.
I remember there's a famous blackout in 2003. And like literally.
I remember that.
Yeah, the whole city went dark. And it was the first time in my life where we went on the roof of our building. And I'm like, oh, my God. I didn't know it existed.
Oh, that's like heartbreaking almost.
Yeah. I mean, you got other things going on there. But it definitely made me realize I'm like, I really like nature sometimes. Mm-hmm. But it was beautiful. It was beautiful. So I'm a big star person too.
Yeah. I hope you get to see some stars tonight.
Yeah. So You did mention before what you think you consider like to be what makes a hotel have great hospitality, but is there anything else specifically, or like
I think for here specifically, with my background and training in luxury, like the top of the line, I like to apply what I learned and train our teams similar veins, but just like really, because it's a state park and because of our demographic, like be yourself, like apply these rules and apply these tools, but be yourself and have fun. And that's going to make us the most successful. That's just kind of how I view hospitality, because I do genuinely want to help people and make their stay nice and have fun and share the community that I've been part of for so long. That brings me so much joy to be like friends with the business owner, like go visit our friends who own and work here, and these really amazing artists, or so having that knowledge of the sense of place and being able to share that with people and promote the community that's very special to me. And I think that's a big part of hospitality anywhere. You get into different levels of hospitality, of course, and you lose a little bit of that. But we're of the boutique size and in the place where we have so much to offer in that.
I love that.
I think that Mabel's really lends a sense of place just based off their menu. Like we were reading, they're saying, we make the butter in-house and this comes from the local dairy and this cheese is from here. Yeah. And I really love to know that all is just happening right here and it's so fresh.
Yes. And a lot of those places that are on the menu are part of something called the Food and Farm Tour. So we can actually schedule trips and send our guests to those places where they're eating the things on the menu from. And
I love that.
It's so yes. Like agritourism is very, very big out here. And there's a lot of it. So
we saw a lot of cows driving here and
I felt like home.
I was like, you might be for dinner. No, I'm kidding.
That is real. Most of them are dairy cows.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good. Now I don't feel so bad. but what I like about it, it's weird because I think some people, it's normal to be so separate from your food. Or some people like that. They're like, I don't want to think about it. But I feel the opposite. I like knowing exactly where this is from and like looking at the animal, and it gives a totally different experience to eating. Like I feel like the eggs we ate, we're like, you can taste the freshness. You can, mm-hmm. I can
absolutely.
I'm like, this is the neighborhood eggs. Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? It makes it feel so different. And I loved it.
It is special to share that like mindset with other people who might not have ever even thought of it before. And that is conservation.
The conservation is awesome. We really should be doing it more. I'm on board.
Yeah. There's been a lot of education about where your food comes from, more so in the last decade than ever before. So we definitely talk about it a lot here. And same with the marketplace down below. A lot of those are local purveyors. And if they're not, they're high quality. And there's a story behind each one. So we try to keep that throughout. And even down to the winemakers we source from. Most of our wine producers come from like very small batch, high quality.
It seems like there's a theme between conservation, community, and supporting small businesses. I see this like connection and I really love it. And I don't understand when there is an opportunity, maybe because I lived in big cities where I'm like, how are you not grabbing onto this opportunity? But when you see someone embracing it, you're like, yes, this is how it should be. This is so nice. And it just makes sense. Like it's all connected. And I don't know, you can really feel that here.
It is very strong here. I mean, this is historically a ranching community in the mid 1800s. And that was really what was out here. And they were farmers and ranchers. And then slowly, you kind of like layer in people moving here because it's pretty or lots of different reasons. But this, it could have been developed. It could have looked like the rest of Marin County, but they did decide to like conserve it. And that brings in a lot of like-minded people when you have that. It just has kind of evolved to be this over the years, but it is a very tight-knit community, and there's a very strong sense of protecting it and nurturing it through these different food systems or businesses or different things.
Yeah.
Even down to our oyster farms.
I have some of the oysters.
Oh, good. Did you shuck one?
I didn't.
Oh.
But I watched him.
Yeah. It's intimidating. I've shucked all of one oyster in my life. I'll just say it's intimidating. I know, like the knife near the hand. I'm like, no, thank you. But the oysters are filter feeders. So they are in the bay and they're actually filtering like pollution and different things through them and cleaning the water. You know, like there's just, and that is intentional that they're here for that reason. The Hog Island Oyster Company has a very, and I highly recommend if you come back at some point to do their oyster farm tour. You learn so much. It's very fascinating. But it is one of the things behind the reason why they started that business. They're very special.
Okay, let's jump into some history now.
When we talk about the land and its history, we're talking about the long history.
Yes.
We're going way back.
Way back. The indigenous Coast Miwok lived in the area of Tomales Bay for thousands of years before Europeans arrived. So, of course, the lodge at Marconi is on the ancestral lands of the Coast Miwok of present-day Marin County, and they endured centuries of erasure, displacement, and genocide, and continue to face many iniquities to this day. When English explorer Francis Drake landed on the Marin Peninsula in 1579, the chaplain of his Golden Hind galleon noted the friendliness of the native people in his diary.
The Miwok's second European encounter came in 1595. Captain Sebastian Sermano's Manila galleon, the San Augustin, sank in what is now called Drake's Bay with a cargo of Ming Dynasty porcelain.
Ooh.
Yeah. The wreckage is thought to be buried beneath the bay. The local Coast Miwok retrieved and used pieces of the Ming porcelain for tools and ornaments. Shards of it washed up on the beach to this day.
Oh my goodness. Occasionally some of that treasure still makes its way up.
How much porcelain? That's so weird.
A galleon is pretty big. It was probably full to the brim. That's quite a shipwreck. A Coast Miwok tribal village stood about 2 miles south of today's town of Marshall, near the conference center. The village was called Etkakolum in the Miwok dialect of the Penutian language family. Historians estimate more than 3,000 Coast Miwok lived in Marin and Sonoma villages.
In 1817, Franciscan missionaries claimed the Marin Peninsula and built Mission San Rafael, converting native people to their religion and using them as a labor force. Most Coast Miwok people died from contagious diseases that spread quickly in the mission's close living condition. After the missions were secularized in 1834, Mexican Governor Jose Figueroa promised to the surviving Miwok an 80,000-acre land grant at Nicasio from Tomales Bay to today's San Geronimo.
I'm going to guess that didn't happen.
Meant as reparation for the loss of their tribal lands, this property was never formally deeded to the Miwok people. Shocker. After years of delay, General Mariano Vallejo granted this land to 5 Miwok members on October 14th, 1844. Why only 5? Were there only 5 left?
Oh my God, that would be so sad. Maybe they were the elders?
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. The next day, Vallejo's nephew, former California Governor Juan Bautista Alvarado, quote unquote, bought the land grant from these Miwok owners. The Miwok signed a deed in return for Vallejo's promise to pay them $1,000. $1,000 for 80,000 acres? Even back then. Come on.
Wasn't Manhattan sold for $25 and a couple of corn?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Miwok never received their money, nor did they know that 2 months before, then-Governor Manuel Michel Torena had legally granted most of their promised land to 2 other people. Wow.
Rocky, steep, undesirable land at Greytown in Sonoma County was eventually given to the Miwok, but some surviving tribe members chose to labor for others at Nicasio. Others lived in nearby houses built on pilings over Tomales Bay, selling harvested shellfish to make ends meet. Coast Miwok and some southern Como formed the Federated Coast Miwok in 1992. This blended tribe's federal recognition was officially restored as the Federated Indians of Graton Rancheria in 2000.
Today's members, all descended from the original tribes, honor the homeland of their ancestors and work to revive the Miwok language and customs for future generations. So this is the struggle of all of the indigenous peoples here trying to keep their languages from dying out and all of their knowledge that would have been normally handed down orally. Yeah, I've been reading Braiding Sweetgrass, and it's by an indigenous botanist, and she's talking about her struggle to try to learn her ancestral language and how frustrating it is and hard it is. But like only a handful of people in their tribe still speak it, and they're all like over the age of 70.
Hey, it's hard. Yeah, that's it's hard when it's...
Yeah.
Why designate each state to have like to go back and learn about each indigenous language from each state? Am I making this up?
Be awesome. Yeah.
It would be cool. I would have loved to learn that.
I would have loved it. Yeah.
That's the beginning of the history.
Yes. Yeah. So these are the original peoples of Tomales Bay before we get into the more modern history with
the man that this place was named after.
To say his first name.
Guglielmo Marconi.
Okay, you can say
I looked it up.
You say it. You say it.
How do you say it?
And then I practiced Guglielmo. But yeah, we have a running joke on the podcast that we cannot pronounce anything for the life of us. And we keep choosing things.
Especially French things.
I'm pretty sure you just nailed that.
Yeah, I was like, I need to watch a YouTube video about this man. I need to hear his name 17 times.
What I know about Marconi is from my experience here solely. I feel that every day I'm learning more. Before I started working for Oliver Hospitality, I coincidentally worked here when it was the conference center. Briefly, there was a period when another hospitality group was trying to do what Oliver Hospitality was doing. It didn't work out, so I departed and moved on to something else. But I learned a lot then because a lot of the artifacts were still intact, and they were like placed around like the Smithsonian boards that show like the picture of the guy getting the call from the Titanic when it hit the iceberg using the Marconi's technology. And so I learned a lot from those. I've done research, of course, and I've built out our historical components of our compendium, things like that. Mm-hmm. But I mostly just know what was happening here specifically, that we have Tower Hill, which sits behind us. It's a very high point on this side of the bay. They chose it specifically for that. They were doing ship-to-shore communication from there, from the ops building that we drove by earlier. They were completely self-sustaining here on the property. They have their own water source. They have the old hotel, as they call it, was employee housing. They had a market, a saloon, like that was all, everything they needed was in that building. I know that there's a whole system that I highly recommend people visiting in the Point Reyes National Seashore that were other connections. So there's receiving stations and sending stations, and that's where how they were getting from here into the park, out to the ships, back to the shore. So there's an interconnecting, still intact system out in the seashore. And also in Bolinas, there's a place that you can visit, and the towers are still up, and they're still in there actually doing Morse code on the weekends.
What?
So they have docents. One of them, Richard Dillman, is a good friend of mine. It's called the Maritime Historical Society. And so they are in there, and they're on their radios, and they're doing Morse code and talking to people out in the ocean in the Pacific. And so you can go and visit and take a tour there, which is another thing to do when you come back another time.
That is so fun. And so
it's really fun.
The tower that he built here was a receiving station or a sending station? I think it was a receiving station. I feel like that's what I read.
That sounds familiar.
He invented the radio signal.
So he's like credited to be the inventor of radio, but it was really sort of a a standing on people's shoulders situation. Mm-hmm. No, he didn't steal it. He improved upon it. He used a lot of Tesla's patents, and he was basically obsessed with radio signals. And at the time, they could only go 2 miles at a time. And he's the one who figured out how to get them to go further, like thousands of miles, and then across the ocean.
That's important.
So it's very impressive and very important. It changed the course of civilization.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Very impactful.
So originally, the radios were called Marconis, right? That was the name of the...
There's all sorts of things named after Marconi. My husband, as I was saying, is a musician, and they have, like, you can still get them. They're called Marconi knobs, and they're knobs on old vintage equipment. Sound equipment.
Yeah. Well, and I love that throughout the lodge, there's old radios everywhere.
Yeah.
Do any of them work? Are they old? No.
They look very cool.
They're so very cool. Yeah. Those are owned by the state parks, so they're on loan to us. They're part of our historical interpretation.
That's so cool. Yeah. I love it. And so it was a Marconi radio, as you mentioned, that was on the Titanic, that enabled them to radio the Carpathia, I think. And the ship Carpathia. And that's the Carpathia came and managed to save the 700 people still alive.
Very remarkable. Ocean. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was thanks to Marconi that anyone survived the Titanic.
I didn't know that. That's crazy. That's actually really amazing.
Yeah. So he was only 20 when he figured all of this out.
Like, very young.
He was so young. And that was in 1900 or something.
I think it was 1890s.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then he passed in 1937, I read.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so here.
doing the math.
don't get me started.
He was an old guy.
But so he built his antenna here 1913 or 14?
14.
14. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So he was never actually here.
Oh, really?
No, he was never actually. It is, they've determined that he was never actually here. It was his organization.
Okay.
Oh.
He was very important around those years. Yeah. So I don't.
He was probably busy.
Yeah.
So they built their antenna, and then, as you said, they built the original structure, which was a boarding house for all of his employees, and had so many other things going on in it. I'm so impressed that they put a saloon, but then I started thinking about it, and I was like, well, in California in 1914.
Hello, I know, right?
Yeah. A lot less going on back then than there is
now. Well, and maybe not even a full-blown saloon or anything. Yeah. But. They had to sustain themselves.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot going on in Marshall back then.
So, yeah, the men need their whiskey. After the Marconi technology sort of fell out of use, then what happened to the property after that?
Maybe we can fill in the blanks together, but shortly after, the U.S. government took over the property and was using the towers during one of the wars.
That would make sense.
There was some sort of seizure of the land, and don't quote me on this, but they did have that for a while. And how it became available for sale after that, I am unaware of that.
Yeah, because I think I did read that there were military people staying in the lodgings at some point, like generals or somebody was staying here.
During the Marconi era, for sure. And then I'm not sure about when the United States government took that.
I would say it's a safe assumption that something with World War II and the government, for sure, especially with radio here.
And they were using that. Then they were using out in the seashore, like I said, that sending station that you can still visit to this day. They were 100% using that. And this must have been looped in as a signal.
Being with the whole Pacific front of the war. I could definitely see the government requisitioning and saying, no, this is ours now.
Yeah. But how it got from a government to then being available for somebody else to purchase, I'm not clear on that transaction.
So after the interview, we were able to answer this question from the California State Parks website. So when World War I broke out in Europe in 1914, control of similar wireless stations in Ireland, Wales, and Russia were all seized by their respective countries' governments. As the only company capable of transatlantic radio and telegraph communications, Marconi Wireless Company's wireless stations in the U.S. were all confiscated by the U.S. Navy in 1917. After the war, keeping such equipment in American hands became a priority. Because Marconi Wireless Telegraph Company of America was owned by a British parent company, U.S. naval officials urged the General Electric Company, GE, to acquire the American Marconi Company's transatlantic assets. So in 1919, GE formed the Radio Corporation of America, RCA, and that corporation's bylaws specified that all of RCA's directors and officers must be U.S. citizens. RCA then merged with American Marconi, so the duplex stations at Marshall and Bolinas became RCA property. RCA sold all but these 62.4 acres at Marshall in 1922. So during World War II, this area was used by the military and Coast Guard personnel who were stationed to patrol nearby beaches. And then after the war was over, RCA sold the remaining acreage in 1947. Eventually, the Marshall site was sold for $175,000 to the Synanon Foundation in 1964. We will return next week for part two as the property becomes one of the centers of the notorious cult Synanon and find out what's been happening since the 1960s at Marconi Lodge. So make sure you check back next week for part two. Thanks for listening to Hotel History. You can follow us on most social media platforms, Patreon, and Substack by searching for Hotel History or Hotel History Podcast. To connect or collaborate with us, check out our website at hotelhistorypodcast.com. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify so we can reach more listeners.